The coronavirus and politics threaten to overshadow tomorrow's opening ceremony of the Olympic Games in Beijing. At a press conference today, reporters raised issues of human rights and asked International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach if he would meet with Chinese tennis star Peng Shuai. Peng went missing from public view after accusing a top Chinese official of sexual assault.
The answer is yes. We will have the meeting. I'm very happy and also grateful to Peng Shuai.
Chinese officials are eager to keep politics and COVID out of these games. So let's get into that and the sports, of course. Louisa Thomas writes about sports for The New Yorker. Hi, Louisa.
Thanks for having me.
And NPR correspondent Emily Feng is with us from Beijing. Emily, welcome to you.
Thank you, Peter.
And let's start with you, Emily. One of the biggest storylines so far of these Olympic Games, the COVID bubble. I understand you're outside the bubble in Beijing, Emily, but paint a picture for us. Just how intense and isolating is it?
It's so intense that, to give you an example, I've been trying to get some necessities, nail clippers and chocolate, to my colleagues inside the bubble because they forgot to pack a few things. And it's taken me two days. You've got to mail a package in. They have to spend a day disinfecting it. And then it's taken up into the hotel rooms. So these are facilities across Beijing, some of them right in the middle of the city that are completely walled off from the rest of the Chinese population. And things going in have to go through a certain process. And everyone coming out goes through a process that's equivalent to traveling into China from a foreign country. You've got to quarantine for 3 weeks and do multiple negative COVID tests. And the idea is that if there aren't any infections inside the bubble, and there have been about 290 or so far, that they stay within these bubbles and they don't spread.
It's amazing that there are several hundred infections so far despite these precautions. Are officials concerned about that?
Well, yesterday they gave a press conference and they said that they have, quote, things under control. They have optimism that they'll be able to keep things under control as the games kick off after tomorrow. The real worry is that athletes are going to be the ones that get sick. And if they do test positive, they will not be able to compete. And so they're throwing away 4 years of training down the drain if that happens. This is especially devastating if you're on a team sport and one of your teammates tests positive and the entire team has to go into isolation because they're close contacts. The IOC and the Beijing authorities have relaxed their COVID prevention rules inside these bubbles. But that being said, it's still a real concern that the anti-COVID rules could cripple the spirit of competition within the bubbles.
Well, Louisa, I want to talk to you about that because I spoke recently with the American ice dancers Jean-Luc Baker and Caitlin Hawaiik. And it was interesting because Caitlin said the stress over COVID of potentially getting sick is real. Let's listen.
I never expected to have, let's say, a distraction that actually took up a large portion of energy compared to just like tunnel vision focusing on our craft and our sport.
So I expected most of the athletes to sort of brush it off. But do you think that the COVID cloud will actually affect any of the performances?
Absolutely. I mean, they're humans. They only seem superhuman. Athletes famously have a kind of ability to compartmentalize and have tunnel vision when it comes to competition. But at the same time, you know, they live in the world and some of them have arrived and have tested positive. Alana Myers-Taylor, a bobsled three-time Olympic medalist, arrived to learn that she was COVID positive. She's a new mom. It's not been an easy journey to get there. And she found herself suddenly in isolation and everybody's worried about that. Some of the game's biggest stars also had COVID on the eve of the games. Shaun White, Michaela Schifrin, and, you know, they're back and they're competing and maybe it'll be actually a little bit less of a concern for them. But at the same time, you know, that can't have been easy either. Athletes calibrate their training so carefully, really day by day on the eve of the Olympics. And that kind of disruption is enormous.
We're going to get more into the sports in just a moment, but Emily, I want to ask you about one other storyline here that has more to do with politics. That is concern over China's history of human rights abuses. Again, the IOC president Thomas Bach today at his press conference declined basically to comment on China's treatment of the Uyghurs.
If we are taking a political standpoint and we are getting in the middle of tensions and dispute and confrontations of political powers, then we are putting the games at risk.
I assume the Chinese government was listening to that press conference closely today. What kind of effort is Beijing taking to make sure that these kinds of issues and headlines don't come up too often?
Well, they've been very, very nervous about athletes potentially making political statements before and after competitions. And various people have been calling around. People are asking questions of journalists, of people around them. Hey, have you heard anything about athletes planning on making a political statement inside the bubble. Of course, these are human beings. We have no control over what they do, but that's made Beijing especially nervous because, in this case, they've got to follow international rules. They cannot script the press conferences. They can't tell international athletes what to say.
And yet, Louisa, isn't it true that the government has actually threatened to punish athletes who break the rules with political speech? And if that's the case, do you expect that's enough to keep them quiet?
Well, the Olympics, despite its stance as being apolitical, has always played politics in part by suppressing political speech. I mean, there's actually a rule against protests at the Olympics that was somewhat relaxed in Tokyo, but the rule, Rule 50, still stands that you cannot protest on the medal stand. And, you know, a lot of activists are actually encouraging athletes not to speak out while they're in China, to wait until they get home and then use their platforms because the climate is so uncertain and there's no guarantee of safety. And a lot of these athletes also have to return to China for competition. At the same time, you know, there is some talk that maybe some athletes will not be appearing at the opening ceremonies. It puts them in a bind. It's hard to know what to do because, you know, they do train their whole lives for this. And, you know, it is a lot to ask anyone.
So let us not forget, under all of this is an Olympic Games that's about to go off. Let's talk about the sports. Louisa, what is the athletic storyline that you're most looking forward to watch develop?
You know, part of the fun of the Olympics is that sports that you don't think of for 3 years out of, or really, let's be honest, 4 years minus 2 weeks, are suddenly front and center and sort of seem to dominate consciousness. So I'm looking forward to some of the more obscure events. I love cross-country skiing, and I strongly encourage everyone to watch sprinting and cross-country skiing because it's like a war zone at the finish line. Everybody just sort of collapses. They're sort of chest heaving.
I mean, the skis and the poles fly everywhere. Right.
It's so fun and so exciting. Women's figure skating will likely be dominated by these three Russian teenagers who can jump like no women have ever jumped before. And the men, there's an American favorite, Nathan Chen. He will have some strong competition. But at the same time, you know, there could be some fun results there. And I'm also looking forward to watching Mikaela Shiffrin, who's sort of the undisputed GOAT in alpine skiing.
The greatest of all time.
Yeah, so she only has two Olympic gold medals so far. but, you know, she is watching her ski the slalom is like watching Usain Bolt, you know, run the 100 meters. You just want to have seen it.
Louisa, one of the things I'm interested in is the conditions of the snow. The first training runs on the downhill course are now in the books. All of the snow is man-made, and there were some big questions about what the conditions would be like outside of Beijing, but it looks like the skiers are actually pretty pleased.
Well, downhill skiers generally don't like the kinds of conditions I associate with beautiful spring skiing out in Colorado, big fluffy flakes. They like icy, hard, rocky conditions, and man-made snow can often produce that. It doesn't actually produce like these pretty hexagonal crystals that we associate with snow. It's kind of like just these icy lumps. And so the downhill course is known as the rock, and that's kind of good for downhill skiers. But different disciplines have, you know, different qualities they look for. I'm kind of curious to see that the cross-country course is said to have some dirt and sand from the Gobi Desert mixing in with the snow. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
It's going to be an adjustment for everyone. You know, it's interesting because China sort of famously manipulated the weather before the 2008 Beijing Olympics. They have to do it again on a sort of much more challenging scale now. So we'll see how it goes.
All right, Emily Fang, we're going to bring you in here before we get going. Quickly, tell me about the opening ceremonies on Friday. I presume because of COVID, it's going to be a pretty subdued affair, at least in person. What are you watching for?
I'm watching for what the political leaders who have been invited and agreed to come will do. Earlier that day, before the opening ceremony, Vladimir Putin from Russia is supposed to have an in-person meeting with China's leader Xi Jinping. And I wonder how the two leaders are going to act together at the opening ceremony. They're supposed to put out some kind of joint statement about their vision for world affairs before the opening ceremony. This is in relation to the Russian troop buildup next to the Ukrainian border and the fact that China and Russia have been sidling closer and closer as the U.S. bears down on both of them. So there's an interesting as Louisa mentioned, political element to all of this. Despite China's insistence that this is an apolitical sporting event, China has been using this as a political opportunity to get all of their nearest and dearest political allies together and get some business done. I'm also curious to know what the performances will be like. If you remember the 2008 opening ceremony, it blew everyone out of the water. They were so impressed with the theatrics and the costumes. China also was very impressed, and so they brought in the same director, Zhang Yimou, who's also a film director, to design the Winter Olympic opening ceremony again. There are really high expectations. I just don't see how he's going to meet them, but let's see how Zhang Yimou performs.
NPR's Emily Feng reporting from Beijing, and Louisa Thomas, a staff writer for The New Yorker. Thank you very much for your time, both of you. Enjoy the games.
Thank you.
Thanks. Should be interesting and hopefully some fun, too.